You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
I'm happy to be joined by Daniel Cromer, first-time author, now capital A author. Put it in the bio. Mm-hmm. Self-published The Kindling recently.
Yes.
First in a series.
Totally first in a series.
Yeah.
So you can't do fantasy and not have it be a series.
Yeah, so fantasy novel. So talk to me about the book. What's the starting point? What's the jumping off point for the series?
Yes. So this first one in our little saga, our symphony, if you will, because I call each one movements. In this first one, it's a very coming of age story. So if I were to crunch down the synopsis into its bare bones, you got a young boy and his stepsister. And in this world, magic is very, very ubiquitous. Everybody can use it. It's like a muscle that needs to be exercised. And at the point in every person's life, they have this event called the kindling. And that's sort of the moment where a person like taps into their magic for the first time and can start using it. So it's kind of metaphorical to things like coming of age or puberty or shifting through adolescence, that sort of thing.
Sure.
And so our lead, Marcus, he's about 19, 20 at this point of the story, and he still hasn't had his kindling yet. So he's kind of like thinking, what the hell's going on? And so he wants to go and attend this fantastic, like famous magical academy the next country over, because he wants to be a sorcerer just like his stepdad, who's kind of like a legend back during his time. But his stepsister, Teresa, she's very shy, very, very overprotective, and doesn't want that for him. So while those two are kind of like making their way through their troubles, they bump into this mercenary fugitive on the run called Ronan. And he was part of like a very powerful crime syndicate. And he's just come back from the fallout of what was supposed to be the heist of the century, but it has gone horrifically wrong. And the three literally bump into each other, and now they need to work together to save the land from this horrible disaster that's about to tear the land apart.
Sure. So talk to me then, so fantasy. Talk to me about fantasy. Where did the love for fantasy start? What are the sort of key touchstones for you in the genre?
Yes, I think I've always been a very avid reader growing up. I don't think there's any fantasy writer that isn't inspired in some capacity by Tolkien.
Sure.
He's sort of just like the godfather of all of that. I read a ton of Roald Dahl. Went through Harry Potter, of course, like most kids. And on top of books as well, I'm also very much inspired by films as well, films and video games by extension, especially like some of the stuff like The Dark Crystal or Labyrinth. Those things, like those films, scratch like such a nice part of my brain. And video games like The Elder Scrolls, which are just masterclasses in terms of like world building as
sure.
well, because that's sort of something that I've delved into when crafting this whole world for the series as well. So I draw a lot of inspiration from that. And I actually recently finished a summer school paper, Fantasy and the Imagination, with the wonderful Paul Tankard. You can tell he absolutely, absolutely loves that subject. And it's like it helped us get back in touch with all of that fantasy literature. And Lord of the Rings was required reading, so that's how you know it's a good paper. But it really, like, re-inspired me again. So stuff like that has just been, it's always been a cool thing for me.
So the world-building aspect, obviously Tolkien, like, pioneered the whole, you have to have a language, you have to have you have to know the background granularity of everything,
yeah.
No matter whether it's in the novel or not. Has that been really fun to do? Is that, like, a really... Have you written it all down? Do you keep it all in your head?
I'd say about 50% of it is jotted down in a rough outline, because the whole rest of the series is pretty much mapped out properly. But like a bunch of other stuff, like ideas that sort of hang around in my head, but I know that I benefit a lot better when I like put it down somewhere so that it's not bouncing around all the time. But it's sort of, it's, w- w- world building can be like, it can be a nasty rabbit hole to fall into.
Sure.
Because, you know, you're too busy, when you're too busy trying to focus on the world itself, it sometimes might distract you from actually writing the story. So I think the best thing you can do is to start off with the absolute basics of what like constitutes the story. And if you want to branch off into some extra curricular stuff, go for it. Like, and it also sort of like expands when you're trying to create a world, it incentivizes you to learn more about this one. Like, you think to yourself, oh, you want to try and create like a new language or something. You inadvertently start learning about like languages or like how you know properly construct one. So it's sort of like a really creative avenue to like learn more about, like, learn about other things that you probably wouldn't have learned about otherwise.
Sure.
It's a really fun like mental exercise, but as long as it's not distracting you from actually writing it down.
What are your writing habits like? Because I guess you always hear about various authors and their, you know, some of their unwillingness to write. George R. R. Martin, obviously a big example. But, you know, like the having to struggle through it versus some of them, you know, it coming like a tap. You can turn it on and off. You can do it whenever you want. What's your experience with physically writing like?
I think what's really good for me is something that is consistent or just showing up for yourself.
Sure.
Because I have enough of a layout and a plan to where sitting down and writing something isn't too difficult. But like when I first started doing the first draft of the Kindling, and that was when I was a way, way worse writer, I just said to myself, like, okay, don't worry about how big the whole thing is. Just sit down and do like, I don't know, like 100 words a day.
Sure.
So I started doing that. And I'm like, okay, this is pretty easy. Let's crank it up to, say, 500. 500 started getting easy. Then I did about 1,000, which is roughly what I do now, although that's sort of very on and off when you're juggling uni, of course, because with something like this, life is always going to get in the way. But it's been a very – the balancing act has gotten easier for me. But as long as you sort of just show up and just be consistent, for me at least, that sort of pays off. Because if your muse is very – your creative muse is sort of very on and off with whether she wants to – sit around and help you. But if she notices that you're hanging around at one specific place at one specific time and just showing up and getting prepared, like sooner or later she's going to whisper in your ear. Mm. So I think showing up and just doing it, you know, I think with any sort of art, you don't mull over how or why. You just do just it do. Mm. Regardless of how good or bad it is.
Do you, because we were talking slightly earlier before we started talking as the people are here about theatre, and you're also a bit of a thespian, a bit of a an actor. Mm. How do you find that acting influences writing? Do you feel like it's a handy thing to have been sort of like a performer?
Mm. Absolutely, because it allows you to. Because as a writer or anyone handling any kind of project that has a cast, it's an exercise in trying to put yourself in the shoes of other people. And as an actor, when you're trying to become an entirely different person, as opposed to I think like a lot of like modern film nowadays, where I think a lot of celebrity actors are almost themselves.
Sure.
As opposed to a different character, like the sort of acting in front of a mirror. I think it's a lot better as an actor to definitely be more accustomed to doing it on stage first. But when you're playing a bunch of different characters that are radically different or even similar to who you are, you sort of pick up a range of different thoughts and perspectives and, you know, all sorts of lovely angles to do with the human condition. And so it makes you better at creating other characters and making them as fleshed out and human as they can possibly be. Because with characters, of course, you'll never be able to hit the actual complexity of a real human being. But the goal is to make them as believable and as varied from each other. So I think being an actor most certainly helps. Any other creative pursuit you may have is going to be very helpful as it bleeds into writing, because a lot of writing is picking up what experience you have and putting it into your work. So kind of like how like Tom Clancy like has a lot of experience when it comes to the military world. And so he's just very good at putting that into his writing, just working with what you know.
And so it's finished. It's finished now.
This first one, yeah.
It's printed.
All done.
And it's self-published.
Correct.
So talk to me about, because you fundraised for the funding. Talk to me and the audience about the sort of accessibility of self-publishing. Good idea, bad idea, pros and cons versus trying to find a publisher.
Yes. I think that is definitely like a big thing to tackle when you're going between self-publishing or traditional publishing. So yeah, possibly my strong warning if you're going down the self-publishing route is that it certainly is not cheap, because you are – the main advantage with self-publishing is that you, of course, have more control and autonomy over what your product is and how it comes out, as opposed to a traditional publisher who will pick it up for you and do a lot of that heavy lifting for you. So if you're someone who is more – you're more intent on having more control and being a little more hands-on with how your product is going to come out, self-publishing is certainly the way to go. But yeah, again, when you start crunching the numbers on all of the costs, whether it would be printing, publishing, marketing, all of these different things, they can add up quite a lot. And also, like, as a student, you know, it's just more of a dire thing. So it's very difficult to do it without financially treading water by the end of it. But I'd say, yeah, I think traditional publishing has gotten a bit of a bad reputation in recent years. So I think there's a bit of a renaissance for indie publishing or self-publishing as a whole. And I worked with, as an example, I worked with the Copy Press, which are based up in Nelson. They are a self-publishing house. So they are the middleman to get you in touch with all of the people in the industry. They put together packages for you to take care of all of that stuff. So they get together all of that necessary stuff. You help pay and cover for the invoices. You have input all of the time up until the very end point. So I think in this sort of age of artistic freedom or a push towards artistic freedom without excuse me, without the big man sort of staring over you, self-publishing is certainly the way to go. And sometimes it's usually the self-published people that get a little bit of traction and then they're picked up by a traditional publisher. And sometimes that's actually the optimal way to go after you've like built up a bit of traction and built a name for yourself. Because sometimes it's not like a feasible thing to just have to fork out so much for every book. So breaking out with the first or second project that you've done, that can catch the eye of a traditional publisher. And it's like, now we're more interested in picking you up.
So what's the process of getting the book into like retail spaces?
That is something that is going to snowball a little bit. I mean, where the book is at right now, you can currently get it on through your order paperbacks through the Copy Press website. It's also called Real NZ Books, which promotes New Zealand authors and their new books. And it's also on Amazon and Me Books, which is a New Zealand ebook site. So far, that website is the only space where you can get the paperbacks and the ebooks. But I've also done a marketing package with the Copy Press. So it's going to be like a gradual thing where like we'll start off with the university bookshop, of course, because they've already ordered a couple of copies of my books in both volumes. They were so happy to pick it up. And so it's definitely a thing where if it kicks off and gets popular, the Copy Press will like keep marketing it and reaching out to other places for me to see if they're keen on picking it up. But like, yeah, it's definitely keeping in contact with your self-publishing team and you know, constantly trying to promote yourself.
Well, I guess the other thing that I wanted to ask is the audience that you're looking for with the novel. Obviously, a lot of, like, you say the first novel is the coming of age,
mm.
which, you know, people would immediately think, oh, YA fiction.
Mm.
What's the whole thing? Would you like people to grow up with it? Like, in an ideal world, would you like that thing of, like, the Harry Potter, where people grow up with the character, or the sort of, I guess, the George R. R. Martin thing, where it's supposed to be a more slightly serious, mm. in quotes, audience?
I think there's definitely that, because throughout the series, these characters, of course, definitely grow and develop as well. So I think I would definitely want that to appeal to an audience as well. Because I don't, with this series in particular, I didn't care too much for static characters. So, like, that's definitely, like, the spark of this whole saga, where as the story unfolds and continues, the characters will carry along with it. And I think that's just more human, and I think it's just a lot easier to... It makes for it's a way more exciting thing to actually write about, but I think it's also just more relatable as a whole, because and I think with also this particular story, I'm not really going for a sort of grim dark sort of tone.
Sure.
Like, I respect stories like Game of Thrones, but it's a little too much like political intrigue and moral ambiguity, which kind of isn't really my thing. Mm-hmm. But with what I've written here, it's definitely more of a, as opposed to grimdark, it's more of a noble, bright kind of fantasy, which is a very new term. It's very hopeful, and it's filled with a lot of, like, uplifting and, like, positive virtues, which I guess I sort of inadvertently wrote as a sort of a counter to, you know, current affairs going on in Sure. the world right now. And I think that's sort of something I've noticed with our escapism, is that sometimes it is the opposite of what's going on in the world. So if the world seems very bleak or upsetting, or a lot of bad stuff is going on in the world, we look for escapism that inspires hope or good virtues like loyalty or respect or friendship and love. So it's a very type of uplifting story that really, like, taps into the excitement of, like, high fantasy and adventure and just, you know, high-flying adventure. So it's very a positive sort of thing.
It's nice to hear you say that, because fantasy is often beaten with the stick of, like, it's not about anything, or, you know, like, it's escapism for the sake of escapism rather than... Mm. Whereas, and then sci-fi gets the opposite thing of, like, sci-fi is always about what's happening in the world, and it's very, you know, ingrained in reality and, you know, so on and so forth. But obviously fantasy can be, you know, and should be inspired by real-world events, or at least reactive to them.
Yeah.
So it's nice to hear... Hear you say that.
I think Tolkien is a good example of that as well. He despised allegories. He never, like, wanted to make any, like, real world allegories to his work. But you, just by reading The Lord of the Rings specifically, you can tell how much of his, you know, because that man came out of the trenches. Mm. So you can definitely tell how his wartime experience sort of affected how he wrote The Lord of the Rings. Mm. And for a man to come out of something like that and to still see the very best in humanity and know that there's, to actually quote The Lord of the Rings, that there's good in this world and it's worth fighting for, that's got to mean something. That's got to say a lot. And that's the kind of stuff that is exactly what I believe in and agree with.
Fantastic. So there's a release event that's happening at the University Bookshop.
Yes.
You don't have a date locked in 100% yet?
Not quite yet. I would preferably want it to be on a Saturday night. So hopefully on the 13th or the 20th of this month. But I'll definitely keep folks posted on all of my socials and everything for when we've actually locked something in, as well as notifying the people who contributed to the campaign to make it all happen and everything. But yeah, hopefully ASAP is definitely what's going on. Sure. There.
So plug those socials.
Yes, plug the socials. Instagram, you can just find me at dbcromar, all lowercase. That's C-R-O-M-A-R. That's a Scottish last name. That's usually where I do all of my drawings for all of my characters as well, or anything else that I want to take a pic of with my day-to-day uni life. You can also check out my website, which needs to be updated, which is danielcromerauthor.squarespace.com, where you can sort of read more about the characters in the world, of course. And check out, The Starlight Symphony, The Kindling, Volume 1 and 2. Those are on Amazon and ebook and at the Copy Press website or Real NZ Books is where you can find those as well. I've got those links up on my socials as well. So
awesome. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck. And I hope people do pick it up and run with it. And, you know, we don't do a ton of fantasy in New Zealand, despite being the country that gives the image to Lord of the Rings, you know, gives the scenery to Lord of the Rings.
That's why the University Bookshop was so excited.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Said, we don't have any local fantasy.
Our own one.
I feel like I'm filling a gap here, which is very exciting.
Well, it would be fantastic to see in 10 years the big film version of The Kindling made.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Actually, as a final question, ideal casting for who, not for like a specific character, but who would you love to have in a film version of one of your books?
Oh, wow. That's a very good question. I've never actually considered that. Because I've always been the type of person who's like, if I wanted a movie, I would have written a screenplay instead. I guess... No, you lost me there. I haven't really considered... I guess one of the characters that appears very, very later in the book, I probably would have wanted him to be played. Because this character that crops up later, he's sort of like the wise mentor sort of character. And for some reason, I always figured him as having... like a strong, like Sean Connery voice. Sure. So I guess I would have probably put Sean Connery in that role.
Well, we'll have to get it done before he.
Well, I'm afraid he already.
Oh yeah, no, he did. Yeah, no,
sure,
he did.
Back.
Oh,
rest in peace. Loved that actor. Actually, one of my favorites.
Awesome. Well, fantastic. We'll find someone. Hopefully there'll be people coming through, and hopefully we'll see it 10 years.
Beautiful.
New Zealand's new fantasy series.
That'll be the day.
Thank you so much. I will.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.